Welcome to Eagle Eye.
What a break from Manoa.
Interviewing your favorite USA Eagles around the globe.
Tony Limbaugh into the 22.
Now, here's your host, Bill Baker.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. When you get a second, please like, subscribe, and follow. I really appreciate it. So, on this episode of Eagle Eye, I have USA Women's Head Coach, Rob Kane. Rob and I talk about his coaching success thus far, and also that transition from club coach to international coach and how difficult that was and is. We go into these players who are playing over in the Premier 15s right now. You know, we have a number of players over there. However, since recording this a few weeks ago, Harlequin's Christine Summer has left the team to come back to the States to train with the U.S. We still have another players over there, you know, Gabby Cantorna, Kate Zachary, and more, and they're all playing really hard. Rob talks about how important that is, not just for them individually, but for the USA's chances in the World Cup as well. Now, again, just last week, the World Cup schedule came out, and I've already got that on my calendar, got that day put aside. Now, he goes into what the key is for USA success in this World Cup, and then how each individual player can prepare for it, staying in shape, staying rugby shape, during this COVID era. So, again, thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
All right. Well, first of all, Rob, thank you so much for jumping on with me. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, no problem at all. It's great to be here. Thank you, Bill.
Appreciate it. And first of all, so I'm looking up your history and... yeah, I know. You're already laughing. So I got to read it off the list because it's so much, but I'm looking at your coaching days over back in England, and I'm looking at all these accolades for you, okay? I mean, Premiership title, National Cup title. Yeah, I know. Sevens Premiership, Premier 15s title, UK schools, Super Sevens, Coach of the Series. Huge question. What's your secret?
I'm just very lucky to meet a lot of, I don't know. It's a really good question. What's my secret? I don't know. I just try and help people become the best version of themselves. That's really what I try and do. And I think the first thing is trying to work out through building relationships, whether that is rugby, whether that's physical, whether it's mental, or whether they haven't been in the right environment, whether it's an environment piece, and then just trying to help them fulfill their potential. I'm more luck than judgment. Let's put it that way.
No, that's an interesting point you bring up. You know, I've been coaching for a number of years, high school age soccer, and I've always felt that it's really important to have relationships with these players to get to know them outside of the sport. You know, that way you're able to communicate with them as well in a different ways, because each player is different. Is that how you feel as well?
Massively, and I think as well with coaches, you know, we can be all very guilty of having these big preconceived ideas, but you know, for you to be able to bring any vision to life. And every coach is working to a plan, as chaotic as it might seem at whatever moment, then you really need to see what they see and know what they know. And then you can help develop them. And then you can put together your master plan, so to speak.
Right. Now, I see you have experience coaching sevens and 15s. Has there ever been any difficulties jumping between the two?
Not for me. No, I mean, you know, they are different games. And when I say different games, it's from a coaching perspective, it's, you know, it's still rugby principles. You've still got frameworks, but for a player, it's probably them adjusting to the different space and shapes and pitches that they see, the different physical cues, the different type of role they might take on, you know. So in sevens, they've got a lot more space to really not worry about physical cues they give away to the opposition, because everyone knows that the ball's going to go wide and they're going to try and get to that space. It's where with 15s, for example, you know, the backs might work very hard at their peripheral vision and reach and making sure they're not giving away those cues so they can contain that last. They're sort of like bluffing that they're not going to that space and they want to hold that edge. So, I mean, those are some examples. But no, it's from a coaching perspective, it's not too bad going back and forth.
You joined USA Rugby in 2018. But
So, it's been an adventure.
Has it really? Well, we'll get into that adventure in a second, but... At what point, or was there a point where you decided, okay, it's time to move on, what's my next venture?
Yeah, so again, we can be quite guilty as coaches of not pushing our own boundaries. And at Saracens, for example, I was there, I was brought in to do a certain role. That was to change the age demographic, was to, you know, build a sustainable program that was to have sustainable success, and, you know, take a player group through an evolution to play a style of rugby that would be fearful and would allow someone else to come in at some stage and take over. So, you know, and that's what I did. And, you know, as coaches, we tell people, you must challenge yourself. You've got to challenge your mindset. You've got to challenge your skill set. And some people don't. So, you know, I took this opportunity with both hands, knowing full well what sort of threats there were, what sort of opportunities, but most importantly, what challenges we'd have to overcome to enable the USA rugby players to really get the success which they should be doing.
Now, how did you find your way into the USA camp? Is this something that you seeked out, or were you seeked out?
That's another good question, but isn't it? So I think with any opportunity that arises, then, you know, there has to be a dance partner at some stage. You know, and it's very much working through a process that is very transparent that all parties have to go through. So, you know, it was very much me being interested and then going through the process the same as everyone else. There wasn't any shortcuts with this.
No, you didn't know somebody on the inside.
I had knowledge of different people, but not to the degree to influence the outcome or anything.
Yeah. No one's dad was running the USA at the time.
No. But that, I mean, the thing is as well is that's not really me anyway. Like with, you know, the way it came about, it was very, we were just getting through the semi-final stage at Saracens and we were planning for next year. And then, you know, it was a case of making that hard decision of where do I go and am I going to stay or what does this road look like? And, you know, I took a risk and some people would say that the USA took a risk, you know, back with me and here we are today.
Are you in the States now?
At the moment, no, I'm not, no. Yeah. No.
Where are you based out of?
So really, the honest answer is I'm based in San Diego, depending on what's going on. And then obviously I'm based in Denver, but right. I do so much traveling. We created the WPL tour when I got into the country. So that means that I basically travel around all the WPL clubs. I spend 4 to 5 days there, meet the coaches, do the individual skill sessions with the players. And that was really the first time in 2018 that we could start getting that contact time and trying to create the playing philosophy and the tiers positionally and unit to be able to get to a stage where we can perform as a team. So lots of traveling to colleges, to clubs. And then I enjoy doing the national development tour as well, going around and meeting all the various coaches of different age grades and trying to help with their coach development. So I'm always on the road.
Well, you're going to be too. It's a big country, but
yeah.
We'll dabble into more of that in a little bit, but so, first ever full-time women's head coach, international women's head coach in the United States. What does that mean to be first? And is that extra pressure for you?
Is it extra pressure? I think people could associate pressure with that. I don't really think of it like that. From a historical perspective, it's very nice to be the first, you know, but I think really it just gives you an opportunity rather than pressure to put in the right infrastructure that allows a professional coach the time and benefit to be able to do. So you can get your infrastructure right and that enables you to influence, you know, across the country and the domestic leagues and the players and all the stakeholders. So you can get that empowerment and development, which can lead to then sustainable performance. You know, there probably was a little bit of pressure when I first came in. I didn't know anyone. You know, I didn't know the coaches. I didn't know the players, you know, of them. But it's rugby. So rugby's got a great community spirit and, you know, everyone is trying to help each other out. I just saw it as a great opportunity. I don't really see things as, I think you create pressure for yourself, you know, and we talk about that with players. I just saw it as a great opportunity to make a big difference and to try and do something that hasn't been done before. And that's to, you know, try and help these wonderful people that I get the opportunity to work with to be known as very, very talented rugby players. And, you know, they're working hard in the background to make that happen.
Yeah. So when you came in, you initiated or you put together a new calendar for the women's game. Obviously shot dead this past year with COVID. but why was that important and how was it working out?
It's massively important. So Emily Bidewell, who's the head of women's high performance as well. So, you know, we spent a lot of time mapping out how we were going to attack the game and then what were the key things that we had to help develop in the game. You know, so I think that the big thing for me is that I always want to give players opportunity. So, you know, the way to give them opportunity is you have to see them play and, you know, and it's about helping them do things they haven't done before. So fulfilling their potential. So, you know, you have to get on planes, you have to get in the car, you have to go to them and see them in their own environment, because when they come to you sometimes, as much as you create an environment that wants to be very trusting and have lots of empathy, like, people are nervous coming to, they should be nervous coming to international camp. So it's seeing what they're like in their own environment and, you know, what, how do they build relationships with their friends, how do they speak to people and what characters and behaviours do they have? And then, you know, you start looking at the rugby side as well. So yeah, COVID obviously complicated matters. When we set out the campaign plan, this was always going to be our performance year. 2020 was going to be the performance year, and we'd set out the fixtures to give us the opportunity to do that, and we'd set all the development up in the infrastructure the 2 years before, guiding us to 2020. So we had two options really. We could sort of complain about it, and we had the bankruptcy going on at the same time as well, which added extra emotion and dynamic to lots of different people. So we could either complain about it or we could just roll our sleeves up and just crack on. So we've always had a really robust remote program since I've come in the country, you know, making sure that we had the development plans and the video learning, making sure we had all their physical outputs recorded, and we had weekly calls. So all that allowed us to do was just transfer straight to that. So instead of having test matches, we actually brought together our playing philosophies and our KPIs, which we had to do in 2020 regardless. And we did it all through video, and we did it through remote learning. And the players were doing skill videos every week. They were doing unit videos. They're doing environment tasks. They're doing their physical data. And then we started to bring together our playing philosophy. And then the big reveals about the vision and what we're trying to do and why we've taken them down this road over the last 2 years. And it was a lot of fun. And I think for the players, it was a really good point, because moving forward from when we did that, everyone was fairly aware of what the expectations were and how they were driving the standards of behaviours and how that was going to be. Decision making has been so important, because in all our frameworks, we've got lots of it. So they understood where they'd come from if they didn't already. So yeah, we just went at it full noise. But the thing is, none of this works unless they do, right? So you can put all this planning together, but they have to do a lot of the work. And we're just so lucky. I've never come across players that are so coachable. I've been lucky enough to meet some wonderful people, you know, through my coaching career. You know, the girls are just so coachable. They really are very, very in tune with wanting to represent the community and represent, you know, the youngsters that play and try and make a big difference to USA rugby as a whole. So yeah, they're a special group to be part of. I'm very lucky.
So during your recruiting process, and you talked about the WPL tour, extremely important, but with a country our size, you know, how do you recruit? I mean, you talked about Atlanta Harlequins, you know, you've seen them, Seattle, Beantown maybe.
Yeah.
But with all the colleges around, you mean you got the bigger schools, obviously, and then you got the smaller schools like Norwich and Vermont or wherever else. How do you handle that? I mean, because there's a lot of talent out there, there really is, but you're not able to see it all.
Well, number one, you've got to be honest with people and say, look, we're going to miss people and we're going to miss things. And we have done, and I have done, you know, and I'll be the first one to say we got things wrong as well. But when you start layering up your development tiers and you start making those really important relationships through your stakeholders, then it becomes a stage where the clubs and the colleges reach out to you. And I was very lucky as well. Like, again, M knew America, you know, all the way as a player, as a coach, as a manager, and now as the head of performance. And then, you know, to be able to rely on people like Martha Danes, who works in the age grades, you know, their knowledge and their scope of the landscape was extremely beneficial. And then, of course, within my own coaching group, you've got Jamie Burke, you know, who doesn't need any introduction as a player or a coach, and Kate Daly. And we've worked hard at developing, you know, the pathway and identifying certain coaches that we think can give us a better reach across the country, who also have the skills to be able to develop players. So honest answer is you work really hard and you put together something that's really robust with your scouting. You get in the car or on a plane yourself, you go and speak to people, you listen to people, you watch people, and then you have to decide whether you think, you know, they have the potential over a period of time. So whether they're short term, mid term or long term. And I think as well, the benefit of me coming in was we're obviously doing things that have been done before, because it would be, you know, crazy to do things that weren't done previously. And, yeah, you know, we're always guilty of trying to rewrite history, aren't we, when something works perfectly well. But it just allowed me to look at things through a different lens and with no bias and a different perspective. And at the same time, the reason that I wanted to get the players to experience playing the best teams in the world, you know, playing against England, New Zealand, you know, France and Canada all the time, was for them to not have first-time experiences and for them to know what it's like to play against. But at the same time, for us to understand what international rugby looks like, so when we work backwards and we start looking at the key skills or behaviours, we can filter that down all the way through the age grades and then have a good understanding of what we need to see in players when we're out on the road. So it was a two-way pronged attack, really. And it worked out really well. It definitely wasn't for my, you know, as a coach, it wasn't for my performance at all. You know, knowing that you would go against these teams, especially at the beginning, and the scores would be high. And that's why I think, you know, it's really important that you invest in other people, and the people that invest in you understand what you're doing. So, you know, I had to be really clear with how this journey was going to map out with USA Rugby. And you know, they were very much on board in terms of what we're trying to achieve and having different milestones to be able to get there. And we're really happy with the progress and the way that we're going to help these players do things that haven't been done before, but not just as a one-off, you know, as a continual, you know, having an opportunity to have a team that, as well as the team did at the last World Cup, and they did really well to get semi-finals. The lessons learned from that, and I won't go into that too much because that group was set by itself and I wasn't involved, but the biggest lesson coming in was, you know, they've done it once, so why can't that be sustainable? And so the biggest thing moving forward is that we want to have sustainable success, so we don't get to a stage where, whether it's myself or another coach, has to come in and cap like 35 people or 40, you know, 40 people. They just cap, you know, they bring in an 18-year-old in a really well-experienced environment with people that have got 20, 30 caps. And then the young player that we identify can come in and just do what they do, that's play rugby. They don't have to worry about, you know, learning at such a fast rate with all the extra pressure of not knowing. You know, I think a really good example was someone like Kate Zachary. So Kate, Kate's doing a great job as captain. She's a great leader. She's obviously at Exeter now applying a trade. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I had a discussion. We had someone that was making their debut. And, you know, I said to Kate, do you want to speak to this player about, you know, what it's like to play against New Zealand? And she's like, Robert played against them once. And that shows you how far we've come, yeah. You know, where we've got, you know, a group of players that, even though COVID has stopped it, we were due to play about 8-10 test matches. You know, they've played 8 or 9 matches against some of the best in the world. So, you know, and it gives them an appetite as well. So sustainable success is is hopefully where we get to eventually. Yeah, definitely, where you can just perform. Like, we've put a lot of investment and work to get a team to perform. And now that, you know, the real good teams are the ones that can get that sustainable success. And I'm a Bills fan, so, you know, I'm a massive Bills fan. I know. But the reason I say that is because, you know, some of the players are Patriots fans, you know, and like them or loathe them, you know, they're a team that represents sustainable success, aren't they? So, you know, they perform, they bring in new people, they've got a core, and they carry on going. So that's really our aspiration in terms of performance. So,
but is that what you were doing against Chicago and New Zealand? You know, introduced, because 13 new caps. I mean, you know, I'm not second guessing your decision there at all. I think it's brilliant, but big stadium, big crowd, going against number one in the world or number two, whatever they were at that point. That's both feet in the fire for these new caps.
Oh, massively. Hugely. Feet in the fire for everyone. We had a new coaching team. You know, it was a new experience, so you might as well throw yourself in the deep end, and then you know who's going to swim. Yeah. There's no point getting to a World Cup and then realizing that someone can't swim. So, you know, and it really is a case of putting yourself out there. And then again, at the same time, we're going through a big development phase. So, you know, we're still trying to see what the players see and what they know with limited time. So, yeah, that, I mean, that's been the journey. We knew it was a very much a hard road. You know, it's becoming more exciting as the group has evolved. Yeah. You know, so it's the way they see the game, the way they talk about the game. And now it's a case of what they want to do and how they want to go about it. And that's when they're going to be at their most dangerous. Like, their decision making is developed so well. And the cool thing about that is they've done all the work. They have to watch the videos. You know, they have to listen to me drone on about physical cues and domino effects. And they do all the work. You know, our coaching approach is very much that questioning is our form of communication. It's very much getting them to take ownership. So it takes a little bit longer. But what that means is that when you actually get to a performance, in my opinion, when you get to a performance cycle, like, you really can perform because, you know, all the questioning is out of the way and they're leading the conversations because, you know, hopefully we can replicate what the previous group did at the World Cup and we can, you know, get to a semi-final, for example. But in a semi-final, if you're playing New Zealand, and, you know, there's not much help that we can do as coaches in regards to line-out menu or space that you can't see or how they're going to align a start of play with, you know, you really can't affect it. So, and it takes a bit of time to build that trust. But decision-making is key, and it's good to see them develop that. It's been a lot of fun. They're a lot of fun.
They
challenge me as much as what I challenge them, which is important.
Yeah, and just like players, you want to grow as a coach as well. And, you know, with that said, going from the club level, upper club level, to international level, how has that transition been for you?
Oh, it's massive. It was huge. Like, I mean, yeah, it really took me a little while to just get my head around that I didn't get hands-on and get face-to-face time as much as what I did. And I had to be really creative at how I could still stay true to the philosophies, which I know a work and a very much part of my, for, you know, part of me. You know, I'm the same talking to you as when I coach. I'm no different. So it's how can I bring that to life in a remote setting, and what do I need to do, and how can I still learn about the players and see what they see and know what they know. So, you know, the first, as exciting as it was, don't get me wrong, it's still exciting. Every day is exciting. But yeah, there was a few different avenues that I had to explore to see how could I make it as robust and really get the best out of it to support them, because that's the number one thing. Like, if you come up with a suggestion and I think it's going to support the players or it's going to benefit them, then I'm on side.
Right. So looking at your player pool, or some of the player pool right now, we talked about Kate Zachary a moment ago. Yeah. We've got a handful over playing Europe right now, playing pretty high level rugby. You know,
yeah.
Gabby Cantona has been killing it. You know, her kicking's getting better and better. You
know, I can't really say that because this is going to go out, isn't it? So she's going to see me paying her a compliment.
But, okay, so she's doing horrible.
Yeah, that's right. That's the Gabby that I know. Yeah, that is definitely the Gabby that I know. Yeah.
No, I need to talk to her about her Instagram handles, like Gabby can't do anything or something like that. I got to ask her about that, but I think she's doing okay. Rachel Johnson's got over there, Kozlinski, yeah. You know, and unfortunately Duncan's been injured, but Christine Sommer's back over there, you know, and I think it's a great path for anyone that can get over and play in the Premier 15s. You know, WPL is obviously a pretty high level here too, but to get that, to travel and to get that experience, I think is amazing. So, I mean, at this point with everyone being down right now, I mean, how important is it to them and USA to have even just that group playing right now?
It's massive. Like, you know, if you think about it, some of our players haven't played rugby since the Can-Ams in 2019. And if they weren't involved in that, the WPL, which finished a couple of weeks before, like, that's a massive threat, isn't it? And everyone has different struggles with their own remote environment. If people were to talk about the DNA of a USA rugby player, female or male, then, you know, the top of the pyramid would be their athletes. Mm. Well, you're only an athlete if you can train. Do you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. It's been, you know, it's been interesting, as we found when we did the event in Denver. You know, some players don't have access to weights. They don't have the support network. So it's something that was a given beforehand is now something that we're having to work very hard at to support them. But having the players in the UK is a great experience for them. It gives them a different pressure. With the rugby being shut down in America, so you've got the UK league, you had the New Zealand league, and you had France that were all playing, and they're best teams in the world. So right. They're only getting better. So the opportunity for them to go over was massive, and they're all playing well, even Gabby. So, and it's a different kind of thing. So where, the conversations that they'll be having over there will be different to what they have in the US. You'd have to speak to them, but as an individual perspective, they probably feel like they have to go and prove themselves again. They're on contracts, they're contracted. So, that there's a certain expectation. They really want to buy into the culture and to the region. I'm hearing good things about them. We do weekly check-ins with them, and I do individual video clipping with them every week. So we sit down and go through their video clips, go through their aims, what they wanted to do. So we've got that going on, and it's great to see Christine back there as well, because she's got a lot of experience, and that'll be her second season now. So, that just underpins, from a set piece perspective, there aren't many better places to go than the UK and to experience that week in, week out.
So your residency program, how'd that go? What were you looking to accomplish with that?
It was brilliant. I think just for the players, it was brilliant just to play rugby. Yeah. Like just to actually throw the ball about and
hit somebody.
I mean, that took a little while to get to it because of the progressions, but to just be part of the environment again. And I think, one thing I think that we've all learned is that the group really missed each other, and the players really missed each other, and their relationships have really seen them through as friends, and that's going to drive them. But it was an opportunity to be able to take care of the threats, like no rugby in a year. We wanted to bring all the players from the knowing to the doing. So bring the reveals and the philosophies and the KPIs to life. So go through all the skill work. And then at the same time, we just wanted to see where everyone was, where everyone was in Can-Am's 19 as an individual, as a unit, as a team, is very different to where we wanted to be this year. And then everyone's, knowledge and skill set, we just wanted to see where they were as we go into this final push. So they worked really hard. Like they, double sessions. We really challenged them. We obviously had virtual meetings. A lot of our environment, the sort of mechanics behind it changed, but our philosophy and the way we went about things didn't change. So instead of having face-to-face, there was a lot of virtual training with masks on, and the distancing was interesting for them, but not so much for me as a coach, because, I think you get a lot of for me, like taking a step back and then having a conversation rather than sort of showing, I'm a big fan of peer-to-peer transfer and getting players to show each other and stuff like that. So, that's their learning mechanism. So for me, I didn't really have to adjust my coaching style. Wearing a mask was quite strange. That is a little bit strange. And
they can't see your facial expressions.
And then, that was definitely interesting at times. But no, we brought all their hard work to life from the summer, all the team reveals, philosophies, KPIs, and it culminated in a really good game, and the Stars v Stripes, which we were very happy with from a performance perspective. It was the first time that we've done actually the performance week, so we've looked at it where it's just performance, that the way we've trained, how we've gone about it, because the players can then lead it as I think they should be doing. So they really enjoyed it. And then, of course, it was disappointing that we couldn't fulfill that second game, because, the learnings that came from that first game from the players was phenomenal. Like the way that they were seeing things, the way they wanted to adjust things in their attacking framework to get to tram lines, and the way they were talking about aligning the set piece even more, or dictating go forward through their kicking intent, or, they wanted to make sure that they were, seeing the right cues, like they were all seeing the same picture. So it's a shame, because we would have seen even more, but we still had a really good experience and we got lots of learnings from it.
So with the handful of players over in the UK, so that gave you an opportunity maybe to bring in a few others as well. They maybe not as known as well.
Exactly right, Bill. Yeah, exactly
so,
right.
So
yeah.
with that said, were there any surprises? Would anyone turn your head?
Oh, we learn, and this is the benefit of seeing people every day. You learn something new every day about someone, yeah. Whether it's an interaction, whether it's the way they view the game, whether it's an insecurity, whether it's a mental factor. And, you know, we learned so much. Were there any surprises? Oh, I hate doing this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Jetta Owens, she was a really nice surprise. You know, she had played collegiate All-Americans in the summer of 2019. So I had the opportunity to watch her play. I traveled to Greeley, where they had the All-Stars, the WPL All-Stars, the D1, D2 All-Stars, I think. And then they had the collegiate All-Americans play. They played in a really good format. It was a really good event. We got so much out of that. We really did. And she played. And so from there, we invited her to a camp in October in 19. And then from there, she was very busy with school. So, you know, we gave her a little bit of space. And then I'm trying to think. I think she said she was ready to start rugby again. And then I think it was something like that. We were like, we had a check-in, how are you getting on? And then she came to Denver, and yeah, like, she kicked the ball with both feet. Like, she's, you know, she's good in the air. Wow. For someone so young, she sees the ball. She sees space really well. Who else? I was really pleased with Megan Foster. Like, you know, Meg's a dual-capped international. I first saw her in November 18 when she came away with us. You know, she sees space really well. But I think... The thing is, and it's difficult for everyone to understand, is that as you go through the journey of development and you're learning what you need and you're learning of what you have, then even if people aren't with us all the time, it's still that inner competition forces their evolution, even if not with you. So regional rugby has been really important to that. So we would do regional rugby from January through to March. So again, I go around the country, we have different hubs, different bases. Mm-hmm. We're all training to the playing philosophy and the different skills that we're trying to bring to life, and you're allowed to plant these ideas with players, and, you know, purposefully you ask different players to come to different regions because you want to create that inner competition. And you know, I'm really pleased to see Megan. Olivia Ortiz, she's doing really well. She's really, you know, developed from, I was able to go on the 20s tour when I first got in the country. We went up to Nova Scotia, actually, where my fiance's from. She's from Canada. So we went up there. And, you know, she's developed so much from where she was, you know, 2 years ago, which was great to see. I could go through everyone, really.
Yeah.
I think the environment. So when you look at the environment, one of the biggest threats is our, you know, our players weren't playing and they didn't have necessarily the support network. So a really good example is someone like Nick James, and she won't mind me speaking about this. So, you know, I think Nick she sees the game so well, you know, her understanding is set piece. She knows, you know, she's forgot more than what I know. Like, she really understands rugby. And Nick's challenge was her support network. So her coming to Denver enabled us to work out, well, with every player, we now know how many weeks we need to get them to a certain state physically and from a rugby perspective. So, you know, Nick was there to get to a stage where she could perform. And players all fall into different categories. Was it support? Was it opportunity? Was it extra development? You know, did we just want to see how they would compete? So it was interesting, the conversations bringing people in. But, you know, I'm really confident in what we've seen and what we know. And the lucky ones, as we call them, that get to go to the World Cup, you know, they've had everything thrown at them. So the last stretch will be easy.
Yeah. And see, so if you've only been here a couple of years, maybe you were familiar with the growth of USA Women before that as well. But, well, and with the downtime of the year, that's not going to help you any. But have you seen any noticeable growth in the game itself here in the States? You know, because let's just say even 10 years ago, it was not nearly the level it is now for men and women. But have you seen any noticeable growth overall since you've been around?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, and I've had the opportunity to because I do so much traveling. So, you know, whether you go to a college or, you know, you look at high school or you look at the club game, and even since I've been in the country since 2018, which isn't a long time, you can see how things are changing for the better. Mm-hmm. The way that people are looking at the game and how they're trying to help their players. So, you know, there's been a big piece in the background with the people that I've been engaging with their development and how they can help benefit the player. And I think that's a big mindset change. And then just seeing so many great organizations trying to get rugby started with youngsters at school and right. and all the various camps that go on, you know, it's getting bigger. It's definitely getting bigger. It's I think people are attaching more positivity to it as well now. And they see beyond the rugby and they understand, you know, that it's a community. And, you know, that can underpin the rugby is part of that community.
Yeah, and you're starting to see MLR teams, you know, I'm in the Boston area, so I don't like Buffalo. but you're seeing, say, the Free Jacks, they started their academy program, and they're not leaving out the women. You know, they want to have a women's side at some point. So that's got to be even more important to you.
Oh, it's huge. It really is, because, you know, people in the MLR are really trying to do something that is sustainable to help development and the game grow. So, you know, the more people that engage in that across all elements, and, you know, they obviously have to build their flagship, which is the men's game. And then they, at the same time, they underpin that with their academy. And then they start looking to develop, you know, women's rugby. And then I imagine the next step beyond women's rugby, they start looking at high schools, that sort of level, as they go through the academy systems, mm-hmm. through to the 16s, the 15s. But I think one thing that people don't appreciate is all of that takes time. Like it takes time. But them just, you know, the clubs and the teams putting it out there and saying, this is their plan, this is their vision, this is how they want to go about it. Then it really does create the right sort of noise for everyone. And then it's just about doing what you say, which, you know, a lot of people are trying to do.
All right. So a couple more questions for you. And I'll lead off with the difficult one. So, talking about growth in the women's game here in the States, we go back to 1991, you know, World Cup champions defeated England in the finals, 98 finalists against New Zealand. Right around 90, 91, that's when New Zealand had their international program start. England had theirs for a while, but I don't think England was really taking the women's program that serious at the time. But it seems like we've kind of leveled out while other countries started to really propel, you know, take over. And we've been hovering in the mid, you know, around 6-5 world rankings lately. What's it going to take to get in that top two, to really breach that next level?
That's a really good question. So, you know, that top level is all about having the best rugby players. Like, you know, there's a certain point where athleticism will get, you know, will take you to a certain point. And I think, you know, that's been shown in the recent World Cups. Mm-hmm. You know, athleticism will take you so far. But your understanding of space, your rugby knowledge, your ability to be able to bring a set piece to life, to really have and have those core skills come out under pressure, which is what the top teams really, really give you, whether it's taking away time or space. So, you know, developing rugby players, developing, you know, people that can see things in a way. And then, of course, I think the next step is, you know, not losing sight that of how you can use that athleticism in a certain way to play a style of rugby which allows their, you know, the player's point of difference to always come out. Playing against the best teams in the world, you know, I think before COVID hit, we played the players played more test matches like in 18 months than what they had in like 3 or 4 years or something. So you have to play test matches to grow. You have to play games. And then at the same time, it's just, you know, money is a deciding factor of all of this. You know, if you look at, you know, unfortunately it is, if you look at the leagues, if you look at the UK league, it's a fully professional league, the players play maybe 20 games in a year away from the international. So you've got a player that's maybe an international player could be playing 20, 30 games a year. Like you can't replicate those experiences. And then of course with the WPL, it's less games. And then it's about trying to bridge that gap through all levels of our domestic rugby, of how can we make the games more meaningful and how can we get closer games and how can we make sure that players are used to the type of pressure. So it's more of just a little step every time they go up rather than a huge leap, which has been probably an element of not being able to reach the heights before, you know, players having too many first time experiences and, right. you know, that it, being asked so many questions that haven't been asked before. So, you know, we've tried really hard in the short time to get through all those questions, get through all those experiences. So, you know, they get there and that's it. Nothing's unexpected. And then playing games is a big thing, but rugby understanding would be key to enable them to sort of showcase their points of difference.
So lastly, 2021, leading up to the World Cup, what's your plan? You know, are we going to be able to get some matches in?
Yeah, so we're just finalising it at the moment. So we're literally a couple of weeks away from finalising all of that, and we know how much face-to-face time we'll have. Okay. We know how many test matches we're going to have, obviously subject to COVID. And, you know, we've mapped out a really clear plan of what we want to do to best support the players. Now, you know, we're seeing if we can afford it. So that's, of course, money makes a difference. So can we afford the best plan? And then if not, what sort of are the other plans that we can put forward to best support the players? But, you know, everyone is completely on board with trying to support the players and make sure that they get the most face-to-face time, they get the most opportunity possible. So we're working through that at the moment. But I think, what does it look like? It would look like remote periods where we'll be putting together video learning, and then we'll stage that through with face-to-face time where we bring that to life. At the same time, there'll still be a little bit of opportunity in that first segment of the year. And then as we push on through, you know, seeing where the COVID situation is when the matches occur. But it's on paper, it looks good. So hopefully, you know, we can get it all finalized and then we can tell the players and then we can get straight to work.
Well, Rob, listen, Coach, listen, I really appreciate your time. And I'm kidding. I don't mind the Bills. I hope they do well. If it's not the Patriots, just as long as it's not the Jets.
I hope so. Yeah, I mean, I'm a Bills fan by default, so I didn't have a team. So one of the players brought in some Bills memorabilia, and I didn't know much about American football. Yeah. And they said, look, you're a Bills fan. I was like, yeah, that's perfect. I'll be a Bills fan. And then, of course, they laughed. And then Emily Henrik and Katie Benson, who are the two Bills fans, they then told me the backstory. And that was it. But we're having a good year this year. So I'm...
Well, yeah, well, I'm cheering for them. But other than that, I do appreciate your time. Good luck this next year. You know, we're really excited about the women's program building up and with the World Cup coming up. I like the pool you're in. You know, we talked about that later, but I think it's a good pool.
It's a good pool. It's a good pool. Could have been... Look, the World Cup's going to be really hard. You know, if you look at the last couple of World Cups, you know, if you think of... Even the road that the previous World Cup, you know, group got to, you know, that was tough in itself. But it's a pool that we know that we have more control over our fate than other people. So, you know, we're going to go in there and hopefully do some good things. And then once you're in the knockouts, like any competition, whether it's sevens or 15s, like all the work you do before getting the players to be able to handle pressure and to make decisions, like that's going to come through in the knockout. So we're excited.
Great, Rob. Thanks again. Talk to you again
soon.
No worries
at all. Thanks, Bill.